This week on Not Sam Wrestling, what was the best WWE TV show of the week? We talk about John Cena's retirement, The Undertaker and Goldberg, Joey Ryan, the King of Dong style is our guest. This is Not Sam Wrestling.
This is Not Sam Wrestling.
Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
And here he is. Welcome. Welcome to another episode of Not Sam Wrestling. Hope everybody's having a good week. Or whenever you listen to this. I just hope you're having a good time. It's going to be a fun episode of Not Sam Wrestling this week. We got Joey Ryan. We'll talk about that in a minute. And a lot to talk about in the state of wrestling. Trust me. A lot. And we'll get into it. We'll get into all of it. But, you know, I was looking at Velveteen Dream's Instagram stories. It's very intriguing what Velveteen Dream is arguing. You know, you never know what you're getting with Velveteen Dream. He does a lot of stuff very controversial. Of course, we remember Velveteen Dream. Anybody that watched the last season of Tough Enough remembers him as Patrick. And even there, he was doing things that were stirring people up. He was getting people upset. The rest of the housemates were upset with him. At one point, Hulk Hogan was upset with him. And now we're seeing Velveteen Dream sending messages to Hulk Hogan through his wrestling attire. I think it's all great. I always liked Patrick on Tough Enough. I thought he was like the fan representative of the show. You know, a lot of the guys went on that show and they didn't seem to know the first thing about WWE. They didn't seem like they were fans. I always thought it was weird. I guess it's not weird. They're just going to try to be famous and make a whole bunch of money. But, you know, you go on and you look at them and they're like watching the WWE network in the house that they live in or whatever. But it's all news to them. You know, it's all like, oh, yeah, I was watching whatever, Vengeance from 2005 or whatever. And it was like it's brand new. They weren't at home. I would at least think that if you're going to be on Tough Enough, you would go home and watch a whole bunch of wrestling right before you got there. But I don't know. Patrick showed up, and he's this mega, mega, mega fan. But he says exactly what's on his mind. He gets people upset. I guess the Velveteen Dream is doing the same thing over on social media. You know, the talk right now, and a lot of this has been brought on by the interviews that the former Dean Ambrose, now Jon Moxley, did with Chris Jericho and then with Wade Keller, about creative in the WWE and why it's so bad and everything. And look, Velveteen Dream exists in NXT, where I've argued many times NXT takeovers are the best shows in wrestling. And you can't know why that is if you're not there, right? And even if you are there, if you're not in the ring, you can't really know. I can't sit there and tell you what makes NXT the best. Should we give all credit to the performers? I think they deserve a lot of it. Should we give credit to Triple H? I think he deserves a lot of it. Should we give credit to Shawn Michaels? I think he deserves a lot of it. Should we give credit to the crowd? I think they deserve a lot of it. You know, there's a lot of credit to go around. But the critique of the main roster based on those podcasts and other things lately has been that the creative simply, I don't want to say they don't know what they're doing, because I think the critique usually falls back on the creative of the show as, in a general sense, not necessarily blaming the creative team, which I think is at least a step in the right direction, because most of the people criticizing the show don't exactly know how the show gets made. Heck, most of the people on the show probably don't exactly know how the show gets made, okay? But, you know, the talk is that these guys, and you see it all the time with people in NXT, you know, you see it with the Viking Raiders or the Viking Experience, or no, they're the Viking Raiders now, right? Well, you see it to an extent that over the last couple of weeks, they haven't even been on TV. What happens to them? You know, I don't know. But the Velveteen Dream has been adamant about his point that performers who are blaming the bad TV on the writers are off, that they're wrong. He says, think about how many actors who do a good job or a bad job We'll blame it on the writers. The actors have to be responsible for their own performances on television. And he said, at the end of the day, that's what you're responsible for as a pro wrestler. Regardless of what you're given, you are responsible for portraying your part. And he went through an Instagram story and he brought up several examples in the WWE of people who were given characters that maybe was not the greatest creative of all time and made it work because that's what the job is. And he brought up Goldust, and he brought up Eugene, and he brought up Santino Marella, and he brought up the Boogeyman, and he brought up a couple of others that probably, that in some cases, Doink the Clown, that depending on who's portraying these people, it wouldn't have worked. If Matt Bourne hadn't been portraying Doink the Clown, that character wouldn't have worked. If the Boogeyman weren't the Boogeyman, it wouldn't have worked. You couldn't have had anybody other than Santino Marella be Santino Marella. And so what Velveteen Dream is saying is that, look, these guys made it work. It's on you to make what you get work. Now, this puts Velveteen Dream in an interesting situation. This means that when he gets to the main roster, he's either going to have to live by that or eat crow. And I think he'll live by it. I think part of this is him motivating himself, knowing that at some point he'll be on the main roster. And when he's there, he's going to do everything in his power to make it work. I'm interested to see what his perspective will be once he gets to the main roster. But from an outsider's perspective, I think there is some truth in what he's saying. I think that there is this thing in wrestling where you want to control your own destiny. But you signed with WWE. You don't really get full control of your own destiny. You only get control in the sense that you're on television and it's live TV, so you have the freedom to try to make this work. In film, you don't have that freedom. In film, you go out there, you get the performance of a lifetime, but if the lighter hasn't lit the set properly, if the director isn't shooting properly, you know, if the writer didn't write, well, I guess the writer's different, but if the stuff that you are not aware of, the cinematography, the lighting, the sound, the CGI effects, the stuff that goes in later, that stuff that you are not in control of can make or break your performance. In WWE, the TV is live, which means once you're out there, you're out there. And I think more often than not, it is a performer's job to try to make the best of whatever they're given. I mean, think about the late, great Dusty Rhodes. Okay, I was thinking about him a lot this week because we lost him this week a few years back. And a lot of people were tweeting about their memories. I don't think I ever got to meet the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, which is super unfortunate for me. But a lot of people did, you know. Right after he passed away, we did a great podcast with Corey Graves, like 4 years ago, if you want to try to find that. Because Dusty Rhodes did so much with everybody that was in NXT at that time. But when Dusty Rhodes got to WWE, he was not necessarily put in a position to succeed. Dusty Rhodes showed up, and instead of being the Dusty Rhodes that had become world famous, instead of being the Dusty Rhodes that was a headliner, instead of being the Dusty Rhodes that everybody knew, he was told to wear yellow polka dots. He had to come to the ring dancing and wearing polka dots and get that over. And guess what Dusty did? He got it over. That's one of the great strengths of Dusty Rhodes, that he was given this ridiculous scenario. It never made any sense, except I want to see him in polka dots. And guess what? Okay. He said, I signed to WWE to perform in a role that you want me to perform in. So if polka dots is what you want, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make polka dots work. And Dusty made polka dots work. And there is some of that that we all have to keep in mind. When you're negative about something, and I'm not saying this is about Dean Ambrose, I'm not saying this about anybody, because I am no expert in the WWE creative process. I am by no stretch a sports entertainer or a performer. I am not sitting here and saying anybody complaining about the WWE creative environment who actually works under the creative environment is wrong. I'm not in a position to say that they're wrong. But I also, you are not in a position to say that they're right. Not you being the person that works there, but you being the person who's, you know, making a YouTube video complaining about the creative or doing a podcast complaining about, like, we don't know. We're not there. So I think that in any job, though, in any position that you're in, things can get negative. And you have two choices. You can either go with the pack and complain about the situation that's around you, or you can assess your situation. You can figure out everything good about the situation that's going around you, and you can utilize, you can take advantage of every piece of good and create something that is good. Not in the world of wrestling, but in the world of broadcasting, I've watched people who are very unhappy with where they are because they don't think that they're being utilized properly. Not as a performer, but in any other. This company doesn't realize how talented I am. This company doesn't realize I could be doing a better job than this person. This company doesn't realize I should be in management. Not this ridiculous guy. This guy in middle management telling me what to do. He doesn't understand anything. I should have his job. It's not unique to wrestling. Everywhere you go, there's an I should have his job guy. There's a lot. There's more I should have his guy jobs than there aren't, I believe. But the people that succeed are not the ones saying I should have his job. They're the ones saying, how can I use the skills that I have to provide the best value for this company under the jurisdiction that they have put me under? How can I, in the position that I've been put in, provide a best value to this company using my skill set, using what I am good at? If that's the attitude you have going in, I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to succeed. That's always been my attitude going in with just about everything. You know, that's why, you know, in WWE, I go on those kickoff shows and they said, Sam, we just want you to give your opinion. So I'm sitting here going, okay, something I can do because I don't actually work for WWE because I'm an outsider is I can give an unfiltered opinion. And it might not be popular, but it'll be interesting. You know, who's going to come on the kickoff show and say Tyler Breeze has not been good since he left NXT? No one. But we're all thinking it. We all know it's true. So I'll be the one. Let me take the heat on that, you know? But it's the same way, you know, that I've been in broadcasting. It's the same way, you know, if you're working in an office and you're going, well, the company doesn't value me. Who cares? Stop worrying about whether the company values you or not. If you're going to work there, just get the most out of it that you can and provide the most value to the company. It works every single time. Every single time. I'm interested in where all this Velveteen Dream stuff goes. I'm really, really interested. But I like that he's got a mouth on him. I like that he speaks his mind. I think it's very, very interesting. Hey, speaking of making things work and speaking of a guy that speaks his mind, my guest this week on the Not Sam Wrestling is Joey Ryan. Joey Ryan has a great new documentary that I got a chance to see. It's called This Is Wrestling. And it basically follows Joey Ryan over the course of the last couple years. It gives a little recap over who Joey Ryan is, how he got into wrestling, follows him into TNA, out of TNA. It basically really kicks in after Joey Ryan does not get picked in his WWE tryout. After his WWE opportunity goes away, that's when the doc kind of kicks in and tells the story of the rise of Joey Ryan throughout the independence. And it tells the story of independent wrestling through Joey Ryan, but it also tells the story of a guy who took what could have been the worst professional thing that's ever happened to him and made it the best professional thing that's ever happened to him. It's really, really interesting. And if you get a chance to see it at some point, I would absolutely do that. I wanted to talk to Joey Ryan about the documentary, about what life is like on the independence right now, about the fact that he has seemingly turned down all offers. And at Bar Wrestling, he announced that he's staying in the independence. So the rumors of him going to NXT, it's not happening. Rumors of him going to AEW, not happening. Why? And what does that look like for Joey Ryan going forward? I wanted to get into all of that and more, and we did it. This week on Not Sam Wrestling, it's the King of Dong Style. It's Joey Ryan.
The Not Sam Wrestling interview.
I'd like to welcome to Not Sam Wrestling somebody who has done more for independent wrestling in the last several years than just about anybody. There's a small handful of people, I think, that have turned independent wrestling into what we know it to be, kind of this entrepreneurial place that goes beyond the ring and a place where wrestlers can actually survive and prosper without being under anyone's thumb, without being under any contract, and it's redefined the business. He's got a new documentary that is on the festival circuit right now. It's called This Is Wrestling. This man is Joey Ryan. Joey, what's the haps, man?
Hey, man. It's good to hear from you. It's been a while, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. First of all, I saw the documentary, and it's really, really great. You know, I always wonder, because there have been lots of, you know, every person who considers themselves an independent filmmaker has done some kind of weird documentary about every person who considers themselves an independent wrestler, and some are better than others, and it's all, you know, it's all in the storytelling and in the production value. And I was really, really impressed watching this, not only because immediately you can see that the production value is sky high and this is a super professionally done piece of work, but the story, you know, I think that a lot of wrestling fans are familiar with your story over the last few years, but to have this time in your life kind of put into a capsule like this, I think is going to be valuable as a historical document for independent wrestling, as well as just for yourself to have this. How did the documentary come about?
So James Agista, one of the directors, approached me about probably, because I think they filmed me for almost 2 years. So it had been a couple, obviously a little bit before they started filming. So anyways, he is a big wrestling fan, and he had just learned about independent wrestling. He didn't know it even existed.
Wow.
And he was fascinated by it, and he kept researching it, and he kept coming back to what he told me was me as the most interesting or different person inside independent wrestling. So he approached me, he actually invited me out to lunch, and I went and had a lunch with him. Cause he sent me his like credentials. He works on Bar Rescue.
Yeah.
And so I went and had a meeting with him, and he just kind of pitched it to me, said, "Hey, we'd like to follow you around, document you, and, you won't know we're there. We'll shadow you. We'll cover our own travel. You won't have to pay us. We just want to get this. We're just big fans, and we want to do this." It sounded easy, non-intrusive. So I agreed to it, and then they started following me around and got actually a pretty good time, because, you know, they got the stuff with Cody, in the cage in the Cow Palace, and, you know, stuff with Mick Foley in Ireland and Candice's farewell match. So it was a good time for them to follow me around.
Was it at all difficult with any of the, independent promoters explaining that you had a film crew that was going to be with you now?
No, I wouldn't say it was difficult, because I think I've gotten to a status now where people trust me, or,
right,
or people like, you know, so I think, I don't think it wasn't too difficult. The only place we had a roadblock was, filming stuff in Japan with DDT, because, the culture there, the wrestling culture there, you know, cause our documentary obviously goes behind the scenes, and the DDT was reluctant because it was going to break kayfabe.
Right.
So, you know, the culture of Japanese wrestling, they aren't where we are in America, where, you know, it's kind of an open book. So that was the only the only holdup we had. But other than that, everyone was super cool.
Have you watched it? Do you watch it? Are you the type that like will go back and be able to watch it and enjoy it?
I've seen it obviously a couple times, because throughout the editing process to what the final version became. And you know what? It's like, to me, it's boring, because it's my story and I lived it, you know, but it's the fact that it's you know, engaging an audience, and people seem to really like it, and it's getting, you know, great reviews. And the first festival we put it at, we won the best picture, you know, so like on the first festival. So, you know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of surreal that people are connecting to it. Because again, it's just my story.
Is it kind of amazing to you? Because I would imagine the world that you're in, you know, you work so much, you travel so much, you're at so many shows that everywhere you go, people are kind of aware of who you are. People are aware of what you're doing. The fact that there is still this massive audience that kind of knows WWE and wrestling that's on TV, but is so unaware, as big as independent wrestling is, that there's still this giant group of people that are completely unaware of what it is.
Well, I mean, you got to think about how many people there are in general, and not only in America, but in the world. So, you know, it's definitely like independent wrestling is still definitely an underground scene. Although it's, you know, pushing those limits. And I think, you know, I think the independent wrestling boom has a lot to do with WWE finally acknowledging that independence existed by, you know, when they debuted Kevin Owens, and, you know, and they're like, oh, he's been grinding for 15 years. And then, you know, their casual fans are like, wait a minute, like we just heard of this guy today. And
yeah.
They go Google it. And because of Google and the internet, they go Google him, and all his Ring of Honor stuff comes up, all his Pro Wrestling Guerrilla stuff comes up. And then, you know, they go down that wormhole, and then they realize there is independent wrestling, and, you know, then they become fans. And then, you know, obviously with that AEW kind of growing out of independent wrestling and now having mainstream attention, that brings focus on independent wrestling as well. So I think it is still underground, but I think it's starting to burst through in certain areas. And we're seeing it now with how independent wrestling is growing.
How do you feel about people getting to know you a little bit more as a person? You know, you kind of present this character that everybody's gotten used to, super over the top, super outrageous. When in reality, I think, you know, you come across to me as a pretty kind of shy, soft-spoken, intelligent, quiet guy. How do you feel about people getting to know that guy and not just the Joey Ryan baby oil lollipop mustache guy?
It's cool. I mean, you're right. You know, it is a persona I present, and I am pretty shy and introverted, which I always feel is like the most disappointing thing. I feel like I'm the most disappointing person for fans to meet, because they're like, they expect this wild and crazy guy, and I'm just like, hey, what's up, man? You know, so, but yeah, no, it's cool that people get, because like there's a lot of people that make assumptions about me because of the character. And so it's kind of cool that people can get to know a different side of me, or the real me, you know, the person behind the performer. So that's pretty cool, you know, because obviously the character is very polarizing and I get a lot of hate for it. But for people to see, like, you know, behind the scenes is definitely cool.
Do you feel like you still get hate for it? I feel like there was that thing, you know, when the dick suplexes first kind of started and you got that new wind in your career and everybody became obsessed with this move, and you ran it for all it was worth and kind of continue to run it for all it's worth to this day. I feel like in the beginning when it first happened, there was a lot of the backlash and a lot of the people who didn't like that it, whatever, exposed the business or made a joke out of everything or this or that. I guess I feel like now, because you've been so inarguably successful and you've completely grown and grown and grown this fan base, I guess I don't, and you would probably hear it more than I do, but I don't hear the voice of that critic nearly as loudly as I did in the beginning.
It's definitely toned down a bit, and it helps that, you know, Mick Foley did the dick spot with me, and mm-hmm. Billy Gunn and X-Pac and Johnny Gargano and you know, D'Lo Brown just did it, Nunzio, and, you know, like all these, you know, major names in wrestling now, or you know, three Hall of Famers, and, you know, some. So I feel like if there was like fan resistance to it, to see that it's accepted by the wrestling world and the wrestling community, helps soften that blow. But there's still backlash, which is normal. I mean, I think wrestling is very subjective, as is any art form. So,
yeah,
you know, people can like what they like and hate what they hate. You know, movies, TV shows, they all go through the same thing. So, and people get passionate about their entertainment, which is cool, and weird a little bit. But yeah, people get very passionate about it. But, you know, so, you know, they when they hate, they really hate, or when they love, they really love. So, so there's a little bit still, there's a little bit still there, but you're right. It has kind of toned down a bit.
Do you have any trouble pitching this thing even to kind of the legends when you do it to them, to the D'Lo Browns, to the Nunzios or anything? Is everybody kind of aware of it, or do you still come across people where you have to explain, no, I do this thing and I know it sounds weird, but it's, you know, super, super popular and you got to trust me on this?
Yeah, you know, most people are aware of it. I mean, most wrestlers know what's going on within the industry, even on an independent level. So most people are aware of it. It's you know, it's always fun to bring up to somebody who I'm not sure is fully like when I had to pitch it to Billy Gunn, or when I had to tell Billy Gunn about it, and I wasn't sure how, you know, because he's obviously a large, intimidating man. But you know, he was really cool about it, and he gets the performance side of it, and obviously he did some DX stuff is pretty goofy, but so he was cool with it. But yeah, it's always kind of fun, and you know, it's even more mind blowing because when, like, as you see in the documentary, no spoiler, I'm hoping it's not a spoiler anyways, that, you know, Mick Foley actually knew of it and pitched the idea to me of him doing it.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, my mind was blown at that point, because, you know, Mick Foley not only was aware of what I did, but also wanted to be a part of it.
So the premise of the doc, which I think is great, to me, the central story is this kind of universal theme where something happened in your professional life that you thought was the worst thing that could possibly happen, and you thought it was going to end, and that was the WWE turning you down. It was Bill DeMott at the WWE saying, we don't want him. And that was the one vote that kept you out of WWE. This was after you'd been released from TNA. These are the two big dogs in town. And you think that this decision being made is going to be the end of your wrestling career. So you go to a PWG show. You have a match with Drake Younger. And all of a sudden, this new freedom is born in you, because you're no longer worried about anything. You're not trying to figure out what's happening a couple of years down the road. You're not trying to figure out, well, what's TNA going to think of this? What's WWE going to think of this? For the first time in your career, you are performing for Joey Ryan, and you're doing the stuff that you think is good, and that's the only reason to do or not do it. And it's the greatest thing that ever happens to your career, and it fulfills you creatively, and it makes you this amazing performer, and it draws you the biggest audience that you've ever had. When you start building a buzz and this thing starts to become really successful, does that ever creep back into your head, that feeling of, wait, I'm getting really big and really pretty famous doing all this stuff? You know, there is still that little kid in me that grew up watching WWE. Oh boy, have I screwed up my chances as I've gained them back?
I mean, that's always a possibility. You know, it's weird, because, you know, we want to have goals. We want to have, you know, aspirations. And obviously, most wrestlers, when they get into it, want to be in WrestleMania, or they want to be on the WWE roster or whatever it is. And that's the goal. And when that goal gets taken away, or, you know, ended, then then you don't know really, you know, like, what do you do? Why are you still doing this? But as you mentioned, you know, the finding a new way to look at wrestling, where I'm more creatively open and free, it might make it more difficult for me to transition over to a major company. But I don't know. I feel like I'm an okay spot, because it's kind of weird, you know, almost in every profession or occupation, the goal for everyone is to be their own boss and to set their own schedule and to be successful on their own terms. In wrestling, it's kind of weird, because you're not really considered a success unless you sign that away to somebody else. So there's like a little bit of pressure too for wrestlers to be like, I need to get a contract with somebody, because that's how you measure success in wrestling. But the more, you know, the older I get, and the more, you know, I look at what I've done and the business I've created for myself, I realize that I am, you know, I am my own boss, like, and I'm making it work. And, you know, I got to take that as success, and take that and not get too caught up in landing a contract anywhere.
Who taught you the entrepreneurial side of all this? Because it's not like you just decided, okay, I'm going to be an independent wrestler and I'm going to make my money by doing wrestling shows, like, you really shaped this into a much bigger business in terms of branding yourself, in terms of finding new and original things to do and new and original ways to merchandise yourself. I mean, and you're doing it today. I saw it at StarCast. You were doing the Dick Touch photo op. You know, like you've always got some new, fresh way to make money doing this. Was there anybody that taught you that part of all of this?
I guess it was just through experience and, I guess, environment a little bit. You know, like pro wrestling tees becoming a thing really, really, really changed the game for independent wrestlers as far as merchandising goes. And, you know, and those guys are super helpful when, you know, when there's ideas to promote or pitch or capitalize, you know, they have a good system there. You know, just being good friends with the Young Bucks and seeing what they did, and, you know, they had to learn on the go too, because their popularity, you know, and that wasn't overnight. Obviously they've been working at it a long time, but like it really grew with when they became essentially YouTube stars on being the Elite.
Yeah.
You know, just watching how they do it, and or asking them for advice as I go, hey, I know you guys are doing this, but at a larger level. You know, how did you guys handle this? So just, you know, I guess just reaching out to friends when I needed, not, you know, sitting down and taking a course on entrepreneurship, but just kind of, you know, trying to reach out to my friends who have been there, have gone through the similar stuff, and seeing and getting their advice helped along the way.
Yeah. And I guess part of it is kind of the new school of mentality. I feel like the old school, whether it's in wrestling or any other business, I feel like the old school mentality is far less cooperative than it is now, meaning you wouldn't necessarily be friends with the people that are more successful than you or as successful. You know what I mean? Like, when you're looking at the Young Bucks, they're doing what you're doing on a bigger level. There probably was a time that you would look at them with kind of competition and jealousy and not go to them for advice, but on your own try to figure out how to beat them and probably not be able to do it. I think that we're in a different time though now, where wrestlers and people outside of wrestling and bigger business seem like they work together a lot more and kind of have this understanding that as one grows, all can grow, and it just gets bigger and better for everybody.
I think that's exactly it. You know, I think especially, you know, like, it might be one thing if you're in WWE and, you know, you're on the cusp of the top spot, and there's guys that are at the top spot that you feel like you could take over. You know, like, there might be a little bit more competition there because it's such a narrow space there. You know, there's only so many top spots that exist. Independent wrestling is different because, you know, as you mentioned, as it grows, everybody does better. So I think there's a little bit more. I'm not saying there's not a brotherhood in WWE or in any major wrestling company, but I feel like the brotherhood in independent wrestling is let's treat independent wrestling first and then let it trickle down to us. But let us raise the bar for the industry. And so I think that's exactly what the point you're making. You know, it's more like we want everyone to be successful because then it makes us more successful.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you feel when your friends in your world that were kind of growing right alongside with you started to disappear and started to get gobbled up and signed? And I mean, that's from Drake Younger, who you said was kind of the catalyst for all this to happen. He ends up going to WWE, becoming a referee. You know, we talked about Kevin Owens a minute ago, but even Candice. I mean, I would imagine that Candice LeRae going over to NXT was probably the biggest kind of shock to your system, where you're like, hey, you know, we've got a good thing going here. We figured out this industry for ourselves. And slowly but surely, all your friends end up still going over to, whether it's WWE or AEW or whatever company, Impact, you know, Ring of Honor. And Candice is kind of, I would imagine, the biggest brick in that foundation.
Yeah, Candice's departure had the biggest effect on me, what I do, because obviously, you know, half of my bookings were teaming with her somewhere. You know what? It's kind of weird, because you would think that, you know, all these guys going to NXT or signing exclusive deals, even with AEW, like you mentioned, would hurt independent wrestling. But I find that, you know, if Adam Cole doesn't sign with NXT, then maybe there's no spot for, you know, Flip Gordon to shine in, you know, and so in Ring of Honor. So I feel like in independent wrestling, there's always people waiting in the wings, talented people waiting in the wings, to take those spots when somebody leaves, that those spots might not have been open for, you know, before they left. And, you know, there's now, I think it's helped those guys, even though they're, you know, my friends and I miss them and I wish I saw them more often, those guys departing give me more work because now I'm more, since I'm a, kind of a bigger name in independent wrestling and there's less of us around, more people want a piece of me. So it's actually helped my business that they've gone on to these different places. So I, you know, and like I said, I feel like there's always, another guy to come up and take the spot and just needs that opportunity.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you worry at all that the health, that the long-term, the general health of independent wrestling will start to not be as good because there's all these spots for people to go to? Like you said, you know, as one gets better, the industry gets better, but as one disappears, does that work in reverse? And do you then have to take it upon yourself to try to make sure that the state of the industry of independent wrestling as a whole stays healthy, not just for you, but for everybody?
I mean, I do have pride in I guess how I've helped independent wrestling, or, you know, even with just booking my own shows, bar wrestling out in LA, you know, just having that place for people to work, you know, just to keep the growing and keep the industry healthy, or the independent wrestling side of it healthy. But I find I'm finding that it's not just like these people that have been wrestling forever finally getting noticed. I feel like the wrestler is getting younger and younger, and that's like, I guess, every sport. You know, baseball's mm-hmm. getting younger and younger, football's getting younger and younger. These guys are ready to go and learn quick. And, you know, you've got guys like, you know, MJF, who is, you know, early 20s, and I mean, I know he's with AEW now, but
yeah,
these guys that are, you know, that I are wrestling, they understand it what I didn't understand until maybe I was 30. You know, they're getting it sooner and earlier, and they're working with, you know, a more variety of people. So I feel like there's always, even if it's not within the industry already, there's people that are training at wrestling school now that haven't even debuted that are going to make a big splash because of the all the available openings in independent wrestling.
And I guess you forget too, I mean, as wild as it is, because you just, you know, kind of live this life and do what it is that you do, but you have to know that the kids that are in wrestling school right now trying to figure out what they're going to do when they get out, they've been watching you. Like, they've seen your journey, and that's why they're quicker. They don't have to figure out this as they go, like you did, like the Bucks did. They can look at you. They can look at the people like you and say, oh, they can look at Colt Cabana and say, like, this is how people brand themselves. This is how people make money beyond just wrestling on the independents.
Yeah, it might sound cliche, but, you know, I've been wrestling for 19 years now. So I've ran into a couple people that are in wrestling school or even wrestling, and they're like, oh, I've been watching you since I was a kid. And I'm like, all right. You
know,
like,
yeah.
You know, so it is cool. But yeah, if we can set an example, and obviously, you know, you just brought up Colt Cabana, who's a great example of this. If we can set an example for people to realize that they can do this on their own, you know, and not necessarily like shun, you know, the mainstream wrestling or the contracted work, but maybe having the confidence that you can do it on your own will help elevate you into positions in their company, or if you do sign, or, you know, even get you in a better position to sign, if you're confident in your ability and your in your ways to make money or to be self-sufficient, then it'll benefit your career as a whole.
Well, I think it surprised a lot of people when you didn't show up at AEW and Double or Nothing and everything around that, and that's because only a year ago, you were right in there in the pocket with Cody and the Bucks and obviously with Hangman Page and being the Elite, and you had the huge spot at All In, and it kind of seemed like you were running with this crew. To see you not there in AEW, especially now that you're not under contract with Lucha Underground anymore, is kind of a surprise, I think, to a lot of people. Why are you not there?
It's funny because people still think I'm there or expect me to be there.
Right. Like, they just like associate you with that brand, right, because of everything you did a year ago.
I, I get tagged in all those like AEW tweets and all that stuff because people assume that I'm with that company. And those guys are my friends, my best friends, you know, like, you know, and that doesn't change, but I've had extensive discussions with them, and it's just, you know, it's a thing where they're not sure if what I do can play in, whether it's their television show or if it's so they don't really have an idea for me specifically. There's not really like, if we bring you on, we have to take away what makes you over. So it's a gamble for me, not only creatively, but, you know, financially, because even now, you know, I'm making better money than these contracts can offer, to start. So not only would I essentially take a pay cut, but also essentially start over. And so, you know, we've had discussions about it, and it just didn't make sense. It just felt like I would be irresponsible to myself and where I'm at and my life and my finances and, you know, everything else, even my geography or my, you know, creativity. It would be a gamble that I don't really necessarily need to take.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting, because that's the first time, you know, I think people associate AEW kind of with the Wild West atmosphere that being the Elite created. And I don't think anybody's taken into account the fact that, you know, they're going to be on TNT. Like, this is a theoretically a global brand that is going to have to appeal to the mainstream, and that the same way, you know, it'd be tough to do dick spots in WWE, it'd be equally tough to do those in AEW, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's just finding out what can play and what can't play. And, you know, they're obviously a new company, and they're still figuring it out as they go. You know, and, you know, as I came to decisions with them, you know, it was like, we realized, okay, they're going to be successful without me. I'm going to be successful without them. Mm-hmm. Maybe our paths will cross at some point, but there's no urgency to it, because neither of us necessarily need the other one right now. Right. You know, it'd be nice to work with my friends, but like I said, it's not a necessity right now until they figure out and learn, you know, their own product and how they want to present it.
And look, having a Joey Ryan level star still existing on the independents keeps that industry healthy, like we were just talking about, and allows people to grow. And maybe, I mean, it's not the worst thing for AEW to have you on the independents, allowing this talent pool to still be able to cultivate and theoretically feed them, right?
I mean, yeah, you know, like it's weird still to me because like a lot of promoters say, oh, when I announced you, our tickets spiked up, or we sold twice as many tickets. And, you know, independent wrestling being a different level everywhere, and in each company having their own different standards of draws, you know, like sometimes I wrestle, you know, I go wrestle and there's a, you know, there, maybe it's in front of 100 people in a, you know, a small town in the Midwest or something. But then that promoter will be like, you know, we usually only draw 50, but with you, we have 100 now. And then that's 50, you know, now I've doubled that attendance. And now those people, those other wrestlers on the show who normally wrestle in front of the 50 people are now wrestling in front of twice as many people, and possibly gaining new fans and maybe new shirt sales. And maybe, you know, so my hope is that if I am spiking the attendance at some of these independent wrestling shows, that it's putting the other wrestlers on the show in front of new fans that they can, you know, and now they can grow their brand.
Yeah. There were rumors also that were floating around along the same time of the, you know, will he or won't he AEW stuff. The other thing that was floating in the ether was that you were considering a deal with NXT that would have you perform there for a while and then eventually transition into a coach with the WWE and the Performance Center and all that. Is that you eventually, you know, a week or two ago, you went to your promotion Bar Wrestling and made the big announcement that you were going to remain independent and that this is, you know, this is your home. This is where you feel like you belong. Is that something that's on your mind? Like, does the idea of finding a spot where you can wrestle for another year or two, make good, consistent money, and then kind of go off and go into the next phase of staying in the wrestling business, but not necessarily being a performer anymore? Is that something that you have on your mind, or are you not thinking on that level?
I try not to overthink on that level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always, it would always be nice to have a, you know, like, I guess, job security or, you know, a place where, you know, that you can still, you know, provide, you know, after your time in the ring is done. And that's, you know, that does weigh, because I'm getting, you know, I'm 39 now. So, that is a thing I think about. But I don't, I feel like I don't want to get, I don't want to get caught up into something that, like I mentioned earlier, like I don't really have an urgency to get to, like, you know, there's, I have to stop and realize that there's plenty of jobs in wrestling, whether it's just promoting my own shows or, you know, being an agent somewhere or, you know, even finding a job in creative maybe because of, you know, my experiences or, you know, just even, even, I guess, you know, starting your own wrestling school and coaching your own wrestling school, you know, like there's a lot of different avenues that you can go to. And I don't want to be quick to jump on anything because, you know, because I'm worried, you know, I don't want, I don't want to get like scared into something, that might not be the best fit for me. So, it does weigh a little bit, you know, I can't lie about that, but, you know, I just, I have to like pace myself and realize that, you know, I don't need that necessarily.
Yeah. Do you, especially, you know, because theoretically the jobs will continue to exist, right? People will always need trainers, whether it's for NXT or whether it's for something else. Should you not be able to perform in the ring anymore, you still have this wealth of information that has a value, right?
Yeah, you know, for sure. And you know, some people have pointed out to me that, you know, like ESPN played the original dick flip clip again last week, and, you know, and it was, you know, it's been, gosh, 4 years now, almost 4 years since it happened. So, you know, that clip is essentially going to live forever. You know, like that's not,
that's your legacy. You know,
that is my legacy. You know, but what that does is that also lends itself to convention appearances and autograph signings. And, you know, like, so there's always those avenues to go down too. So there's a lot of different ways. And that, you know, like you're right, they're not going away. There's a lot of different avenues to make money, even outside the ring.
I almost don't want to ask because I don't love the tricks being revealed all the time. So if you want to keep, if this is your one kayfabe protection that you want to keep, feel free to keep it. But how do you pull off the dick touch photos without the actual dick touch happening?
You know, fans, all the time are asking it, you know, merchandise tables at every show I'm at, hey, can I take a picture touching your dick? And, you know, obviously it's over my wrestling gear. So, at WrestleCon, you know, High Spots saw all these photos going around. They said, you should be charging for this. Let's do this photo op. Uh-huh. So we did the photo op during WrestleCon weekend. And it was pretty successful. so I think, you know, it's going to pop up, no pun intended, every so often, these photo ops. And it's just kind of, my penis is very professional and it stays professional.
Good.
You know, it's these people's, I mean, I guess it's the supply and demand of it. I mean, if there's a demand for these photos, then, you know, sure, I'll do them. You know, it's kind of fun and it's different and it sets me apart from everyone else.
I feel like it's the ring gear version. So like when Sting does a meet and greet, sometimes it's a Sting meet and greet, but then if you pay a little extra, he'll put the makeup on and you can take a picture with Sting in the makeup. You know, you can go to a Joey Ryan meet and greet, but if it's a special occasion, you can get a photo op and you can do the dick touch. I feel like that's your Sting paint.
I mean, you're right. You know, it is. It's something that is exclusive to me. Or at least, I mean, you know, like, I guess I'm the only one in wrestling that has a demand for it. So, you know, so it's something that I can make my own and market myself, which is good to have in wrestling because, you know, anything that can set you apart or stand out is better for you.
Yeah. Do you see yourself doing anything with PWG in the future at all, or is that kind of done?
I mean, never say never. Uh-huh. I just, you know, at a point where, my style didn't really lend itself well to that style. And also, not really having a, creative influence over it. Even though, you know, I was one of the founders, you know, that kind of led me to, just starting my own thing where I could, you know, do the bar wrestling thing. And, you know, obviously it's a smaller scale than PWG, but you know, it worked for me. And, you know, I found an audience and, you know, and I can sell out, a bar on a Wednesday night, which is kind of cool because it doesn't take away from my weekend work, which is where I obviously travel the most. So I'm pretty content with what I'm doing in Southern California right now, but mm-hmm. never say never with PWG. I mean, you really can't, you really, especially right now in wrestling, you really don't know.
Right. Totally. Makes sense. Do you like the promoting part of this? Do you like being a promoter?
There are things that are stressful about it.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I don't like the most is that, you know, obviously there's a lot of wrestling out there and a lot of great wrestlers that want to work and they want to come out to LA and they want to do a show, but my shows are standing room only and, you know, and in a tight space. So I can't have that audience there for 4 hours, mm-hmm. you know? So I try to keep it to a tight 6-match card in, you know, 2.5 hours long. We don't even start till 9 PM cause it's a weeknight, you know, and I definitely don't want anyone there past midnight cause it's a weeknight. So
yeah.
I can't really just keep adding on matches. So it's the most difficult part is to tell somebody that, like, hey, I just don't have a spot for you without it coming off as, hey, I don't think you're good enough. Which is not the case, you know? So that's the most stressful part is having to tell people that you just, there's just not a spot for them. But it's pretty rewarding when fans come up to you or you know, other wrestlers and, you know, they're just happy with your show or what you've presented.
Yeah, totally. Is there any way that fans, cause I know that the documentary is on the convention circuit right now. Is there anything fans can do to help spread the word or get it to a place in terms of finding a distributor that you want it to get to? Cause I know that there's a lot of people pretty anxious to get their eyes on this thing.
I guess word of mouth is the way to go right now. We're because of the buzz it's getting and the hype it's getting and the great reviews it's been getting on the film festival circuit and convention circuit. We're hoping that we can ride that buzz into a good distribution deal. And I don't know if that's some sort of a digital release or a streaming service. But we're just the more hype it gets, the better chance we have of getting a deal with somebody that can provide this for everybody.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a great story and it's a tremendous time capsule of everything that was going on there. Are you thinking now, like, okay, now that you've established that your future is in independent wrestling, the dust is kind of settled on everything, you know, as much as the dust is going to settle, it's still wrestling and everything is topsy turvy and can change on a dime. But for the most part, you're out of the Lucha Underground contract. We're not doing AEW. We're not doing WWE. We're staying independent. Have you kind of wrapped your head around what this next incarnation of Joey Ryan is going to be and going to feel like and how you're going to keep momentum rolling the way it is?
I don't really know, you know, like it's one of those things where, you know, I just have to, I guess, roll with the punches, you know, not to sound cliche, but I, you know, things have been going well for me without trying to set certain, like, well, by this time I wanted to be doing this, or maybe this will go this way. You know, not trying to manipulate, things to gear it towards a certain way. You know, and it's exciting, it's scary, you know, but I really honestly don't know what tomorrow will bring. And, you know, and I'm trying not to get wrapped up in thinking about that. You know, I'm just trying to, like, just be myself and, you know, enjoy it while it's there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing how far you've taken it and how far things continue to go. And, you know, I think that it feels like there's a lot of good things happening and continuing to happen. And I absolutely feel like once this movie gets seen by people, it's going to kind of put everybody right back on that hype train that started those 4 years ago. It's going to remind everybody of the whole story of seeing that clip for the first time, of seeing the, you know, the match with you and Candace where Candace was bleeding for the first time. You know, it kind of, for me, all that stuff flooded back, and just the visuals the next day on the internet when all those pictures of Candace bleeding came out for the first time, and it was like, oh my God, this is not just intergender wrestling, but we're changing things here. This is something pretty revolutionary, to tell you the truth. And I think that people are kind of just now, in a mainstream way, starting to catch up with it. So it's really cool.
Yeah, you know, that match with Candace is on YouTube now, and so I still get tweets about it, and I still get messages about it. So it's kind of cool that it's lasted this long, because that even predates the dick flip stuff. So
yeah.
It's kind of cool that match still has is still essentially growing.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing, man. Well, Joey Ryan, thank you so much for making the time today. If you're out there and you hear anything about This Is Wrestling, the documentary about Joey Ryan, then if you can see it, if it's playing at a festival near you, definitely see it. If you can request it wherever you can request it, whatever you got to do, spread the word about it, because it's really great and you guys are going to love it. And I appreciate it, Joey Ryan. Thanks so much, man.
Oh, thank you.
Cool, man. That was great.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I hope it wasn't too long-winded.
No. It was really good. I try to
avoid one-word answers. I think that's probably pretty annoying for an interviewer.
Yeah, I mean, when you realize, like, okay, we're gonna have to ask a lot of questions, and yeah, I don't think anybody needs me telling your stories for you, right?
Right.
Well, cool, man. I appreciate it. Travel safe. Where are you headed to?
Well, today is a bar wrestling show, so just LA, but tomorrow is Vegas, and then Friday is Tulsa, Saturday is Pittsburgh, and then Sunday is LA again.
That's awesome, man. Well, enjoy the weekend, and once you're ready to really push the doc and try to get people's eyes on it, and you know what the distribution is, anything I can do to help, just hit me up, okay?
Oh, that's cool. Thank you so much.
Of course, man. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, for you guys that don't want the content to stop, don't forget you can be a Not Sam Shill today for less than $1 a week. You can become a Not Sam Shill at patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. We did an exclusive post show, audio and video, all about Super Showdown. You'll get video interviews in advance. It's the exclusive place that you're going to be able to see the state of wrestling on video. Bonus shows all the time, including the post shows and captive audience, where I take somebody that may not be as familiar with wrestling as me, watch a show along with them, which you can watch with us, and try to explain why it's so awesome. Not Sam Wrestling, every single week, early, in advance, ad-free, the only place you can get it all, patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. Keep this thing alive, support the podcast, become a Not Sam Shill today.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Here we go. Welcome to this week's State of Wrestling, where we break down the top five stories in this here world of professional wrestling, according to yours truly, the last professional broadcaster. Yes, you know him well. Sam Roberts, host of Not Sam Wrestling. So here we go. State of Wrestling time. And I believe story number five this week, definitely one of the top five stories, is Fyter Fest. And it's announced is going to be free. AEW's second event. Up until last week, we knew it was happening, but it looked like it might not even be on TV. You know, it looked like it might not be broadcast at all. Now we know not only will it be broadcast, but it'll be on the house. The first free AEW event, as it were. So it's going to be broadcast. Of course, the TNT deal that AEW has doesn't go into effect until, I believe, September, October, sometime in the fall. But Fyter Fest will be broadcast live on Bleacher Report's streaming service, the same streaming service where people were able to buy All In, not All In, Double or Nothing. People will be able to now get Fyter Fest for free. From what I've read, you will have to sign up, but you won't have to put in payment info and all that. You'll be able to get it on the house. But I would think that you should probably try to sign up and log in advance, because who knows what the servers are going to be like. If it's going to be free, that's Jon Moxley's first match in America outside of WWE. For most people, I think, watching, probably the first time they'll actually see him, or at least be able to see him live. I think the big match on that show, I mean, I guess it's a couple big matches. You got I think that's the one that you got Dustin Rhodes and Cody teaming up against the Young Bucks. And then you've got, of course, definitely, John Moxley versus Joey Janela. I think putting this show on for free is the right move. It's too bad that they couldn't get on TV and really make a splash. But hopefully, this will be a big test. You know, everything that AEW does now, because it's the first time at bat every time, everything that AEW does is, it's a test. And this test is going to be, do they have the technology to handle the demand that a free AEW show brings with it? Do they have the technology to handle the amount of people that are going to want to log on? I'm going to want to log on Saturday night. I'll be home on a Saturday. What else am I going to be doing? What am I? Out partying? I don't think so. I'm going to tune in. I'm going to see what AEW has to offer. And by the way, you know, production value is going to have to be high. I don't think that AEW is in a position where they can just say, oh, it's just like a televised live show. And you're like, you don't have live shows. This is the second AEW show ever. So it's got to count, you know? But this is big. The AEW is serious. So we've got Double or Nothing in May. We've got Fyter Fest at the end of June. And then leading right in to the middle of August the end of August for All Out. Who knows? Maybe there's going to be another show somewhere in July. You know, you never know. But that first AEW show is going to be for second AEW show. The first free AEW show is going down at the end of this month. And I'll be interested to see. Everything they do is a test. I'll be interested to see what AEW does. But a lot of eyes are going to be on that product. I'll tell you that for sure. A lot of eyes. Story number four. I brought it up in the pre-roll of this show right before the opening theme comes on. I said, what was the best WWE TV show this week? You know, I watch them all. Raw, SmackDown. You know, WWE has a lot of shows. WWE has Raw. WWE has SmackDown. WWE has NXT UK. WWE has NXT. And WWE has the show, which I believe has become a sleeper hit. You know, a show that for a long time, maybe not enough energy was being put in to draw eyes to it. But a show that I think has been ignored and has blossomed, much like the Count of Monte Cristo, has been left and neglect has become its ally. I'm talking about story number four, and that's the fact that there's a little show called 205 Live that you all should be watching on the WWE Network. 205 Live was pretty amazing this week. So I think a lot of you guys listening probably have never seen Humberto Carrillo, hopefully I'm not butchering his name, compete before. Because a lot of you guys probably are not watching 205 Live. It's another hour of wrestling programming in a amount of time that's ridiculous. I mean, think about it. We got 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, an hour of NXT, an hour of NXT UK. It's 674 hours of wrestling a week, and that's a non-pay-per-view week. It goes up to 800 hours if it's a pay-per-view week. It's too much. It's too much for anybody to handle. It's very, very difficult. I understand. But go out of your way. A lot of people are cynical right now about a lot of the wrestling product that's on TV. Come off of Raw, that was boring. Blah, blah, blah. I didn't like it. This is stupid. This is dumb. SmackDown was the same. I didn't like it. This is stupid. Fine. You know what I want you guys to do? Take an hour out of that. Take 1 hour out of your wrestling watching. An hour off of Raw, an hour off of SmackDown, whatever you have to do, just to give it a chance. And take that hour and use it to watch 205 Live. You know, use it to watch 205 Live. That's what you do. You want to tell the WWE what you want to see? Turn on the WWE Network and watch 205 Live. Let the numbers reflect what it is that you want. Let them see, man, I don't know, these TV ratings aren't what they used to be, but look at how many people are watching this show, because 205 Live was amazing this week. Chad Gable, he debuted, surprised everybody by being on 205 Live, and, you know, you're sitting there going, what the hell? How can they not figure out how to use Chad Gable? Of all performers, this is an Olympic-level athlete good looking dude, ripped to shreds the shape this guy is in. Plus, he's got a hell of a personality. I loved the stuff he was doing with Jason Jordan in NXT. All his puns and stuff. But he hasn't really had that opportunity. Look, I don't think moving him to 205 Live is the worst thing you could have done. I'm not sitting there going, I can't believe Chad Gable's on 205 Live. You know what I'm sitting there going? We get to watch Chad Gable tear the house down with Jack Gallagher. Lucky us. That's what I'm sitting there saying. Look, you can complain and say, listen to the crowds on Raw and SmackDown this week. They just weren't interested. Okay, fine. Listen to the same SmackDown crowd watch 205 Live this week. Couldn't keep them in their seats if they tried. Literally, they were chanting 205, 205 at one point. If I could implore you guys to do one thing, it would be to turn around and watch this week's 205 Live and add it into the rotation. Take an hour out of your regularly scheduled wrestling watching, watch 205 Live this week, and then say, you know what? It's good enough that I'm just going to add the hour. Go back to your regular schedule and add another hour because 205 Live is worth it. That's my story number four. 205 Live is a low-key, amazing show, and it was the best WWE TV show this week. Check it out. Check it out. You will not regret it. Story number three goes into the other WWE TV shows, the mainstream WWE TV shows. That's Raw and SmackDown this week. Look, I'm going to tell you, I said this when the wild card started. The reason that I am in support of the roster split is because when you have storylines that are already feeling a little thin on a three-hour Raw, when you're stretching out the same storyline across 5 hours of television every single week, you can't do anything with it. It's too much. The one thing that you're able to do when you separate the rosters is at least tell different stories with all these hours of WWE TV that you have. You know, when you start, and this is what happened when Raw turned into the Raw Super Show and eventually they just got rid of the brand split, SmackDown became a show that you just didn't have to watch. Because it was just sometimes it was good matches, but it was really retreads of what you would see on Raw. And if anything really happened on SmackDown, you'd see it in a video package on Raw the next week anyway. I was watching SmackDown this week, and for the first time, I'm going like, you know, it was, I liked last week when I saw Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, when I saw them kind of have their bonding thing, and then Alexa Bliss was still a heel on SmackDown, but Nikki Cross wasn't there, so it was almost like Nikki Cross doesn't see that Alexa Bliss hasn't changed. She's not a good person. But now, the Alexa Bliss-Nikki Cross story is coming all the way to SmackDown, so you've got both performers on SmackDown. I'll tell you when I realized it was a problem. I forgot who was on what brand. I forgot. When I saw, like, Alexa Bliss is challenging for the SmackDown Women's Championship at the pay-per-view, I guess using the wild card rule, because she's still on Raw. Nikki Cross, I was like, oh yeah, I guess she is on Raw. Real quickly, I feel like we're going to forget who's on which brand. Now, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe who cares who's on which brand? We don't need everybody to remember that. Okay. But if we want people to remember it, I think you got to keep them separated. You know, Lance Storm was on Twitter, and his suggestion was maybe if you're going to do a wild card rule, give it to the champions. Say that you have one championship, you know, merge the titles again, and say you're allowed to show up on either show if you're a champion. Other than that, you got to stay on your own shows. I mean, I just don't know. I don't think that the brand split can survive if the rules aren't taken seriously. And I actually like the brand split. I'm in full support of the brand split. You know, I thought you had Big E's return on SmackDown. I enjoyed the Aleister Black promo. He's getting as frustrated as I am not seeing Aleister Black in the ring, but at least it feels like it's going somewhere. I have faith that the Aleister Black series of vignettes is indeed going somewhere. It is maintaining my interest, so I'm okay with it, but I would like to see Aleister Black in the ring sooner than later. But I'll tell you, to me, I thought Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley did tremendously well together in the ring. I was happy to see the tag titles change, to tell you the truth. You know, no shade to Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder, but let's be honest. They had a moment. They didn't have a title reign. They had a great moment at WrestleMania, but they showed up to WrestleMania not winning any matches to get there, and they held the tag team title somehow, really not winning any matches. So, you know, I don't know what you're going to do with that, but they had their moment, and that's important. But I like the idea that the Revival is the tag team champions, and, you know, when you've got a show with the Revival and the Usos and the Viking Raiders, you've got three of the best tag teams in the world. In the world. I mean, people should be raving about the Raw tag team division. The Revival, incredible. The Usos, I've said it so many times, arguably, maybe, the best tag team of the last decade. And then the Viking Raiders are one of the great wrestling tag teams in the entire world. Okay? I mean, I feel like they should have a prime spotlight on that tag team division. And over on SmackDown, you have Eric Rowan and Daniel Bryan together as a tag team. They're a fantastic tag team. Even Heavy Machinery is great. So many great tag teams right now. Well, I think that should really be spotlighted and taken full advantage of. We should take the tag team championships on both shows very, very seriously. And hopefully, that's the direction we're moving in with the Revival as champions. I think the very best things on both Raw and SmackDown were the 24/7 title. I'm a huge fan of the 24/7 title. I wish we had asked Joey Ryan about the 24/7 title. I forgot before I let him go, but next time we will, because he was a big part of that DDT title that came over to the States and was big on YouTube. But at first, I didn't know what to make of the elevator skit, and the more it went on, the more I was like, I like this. I think this is funny, you know? I'm entertained by this. I'm enjoying, and I like that they're coming up with creative stuff. You know, I like R-Truth getting put into a container and being mailed to Los Angeles. You know, it's fun. It's ridiculous. It's silly. If I sat my dad down and we watched it together, it would make him laugh. You know, I gauge so much by my dad because, you know, he likes stuff, but he loves being critical of things, and he's not a wrestling fan. And I feel like if you can win those people over, you can win over a lot of people. One of my dad's favorite things he's ever seen was Triple H marrying Stephanie McMahon while she was passed out at a Las Vegas drive-thru. And guess what? That's one of the classic bits in WWE history. You know, when the Usy Hot thing came on, my dad was over, I was watching it, and you know what he said? You know, if they're going to do a bit like this, they shouldn't make it dumb. And I was like, that's really simplifying it, Dad. It's his opinion, but I was like, you know, that's a really simplistic way to put it. You're right. You're right. I think if I showed my dad some of the 24/7 title stuff, he would be amused by it. I'm amused by it. And once again, my favorite thing on Raw and SmackDown was the Firefly Fun House. There's actually something on WWE TV that I'm leaving thinking about. I'm leaving thinking about, what did I just watch? When I first watched the Firefly Funhouse, I said to myself, not as strong as last week. I loved how meta last week was with the Vince McMahon puppet and the fat pig that represented Husky Harris and the Ramblin' Rabbit representing Bray and his rambling promos, and Mercy the Buzzard representing the original. I just thought the whole thing was terrific, and I was thinking about it. And this week I was like, okay, he killed Ramblin' Rabbit. And then I go, wait a minute. There's way more going on here. Ramblin' Rabbit got smashed into smithereens because he wanted to talk about what was really going on in the funhouse. The funhouse, representing WWE, he wanted to do one of these tell-all things. And he got smashed because when you're working in WWE, you're not supposed to tell the truth. That's, I think, the message that Bray Wyatt was sending out to us. And then after he gets smashed and he was erased by WWE, Bray started selling his jelly. That's because you want to tell the truth, WWE is going to smash you out of existence and then make money on whatever's left. I think that's what Bray Wyatt was telling us. I think that was another subliminal message. You know? I think these things are so smart. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's what I think Bray is trying to say in this thing. I think there's so much going on. These are the best things on wrestling TV right now. Firefly Funhouse and 205 Live. Who would have thought? And they're both excellent. You know, that's not a slight on anything else. We can make criticisms about other stuff all day. But the reality is that even in an era where there's great TV, this week's 205 Live and this week's Firefly Funhouse, again, excellent. Excellent. So, yeah, that was my favorite stuff this week. Let's move on to story number two. Story number two, I did a whole thing on Super Showdown on the Patreon page. Patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. If you're a shill, you can get access to all the bonus shows, video, audio, whatever you want. Of course, all our interviews go up in advance over on Patreon. Everything you need, Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. But we did a bonus show for Super Showdown. We went over all the matches, and I talked about it, so I don't want to get too much into it here on the podcast. Plus, we've moved on, I think. But I will say, a couple of people, the Undertaker-Goldberg conversation continues. Look, here's what I said about the Undertaker and Goldberg in a nutshell on that post show is that to me, this was all on Goldberg. He got overzealous. He got over intense. He knocked himself out. Goldberg's done it before. Remember, he got overzealous. He got over intense. He headbutted a dressing room wall and he ended up getting lost in his promo out there. He got overzealous. He got over intense. He ran too hard into a post and he knocked himself out cold. And for the rest of the match, he looked like he was dead weight. He wasn't cooperating with anything. The match that I saw, and I'll take a wrestler's opinion over mine because they've actually been in the ring. But the match that I saw, I could not sit there and tell you that that was the Undertaker's doing. The stuff that happened in that match, I can't blame the Undertaker for that. You know, I gotta say that this is on Goldberg. The Goldberg's the one that is at fault for that one. But some people are saying, and I think it might have been Mark Henry, or I don't remember who it was. Some people are saying, I don't want to attribute it to anybody and not be sure, that it is unfair to do to Goldberg and The Undertaker what wrestling fans are doing to Goldberg and The Undertaker. That you can't disrespect their legacy. Now, there's a couple of things at play. First of all, I don't think anybody should be saying the WWE is in the wrong for forcing these guys to wrestle because WWE is not forcing these guys to wrestle. WWE is saying, I think you provide a value. Do you want to get in the ring again? And these guys are accepting the offer. So it's on these guys for accepting the offer, not on WWE for making the offer. WWE is not their parents, you know? So I don't think WWE's at fault. And I am there if The Undertaker wants to get back in the ring. You know, I am not one of these guys that say, please retire, Undertaker. I'll watch The Undertaker until I'm a dead man. You know, his entrance is incredible. I'm okay with it. But in terms of disrespecting legacies, I don't think that anybody is disrespecting Goldberg or The Undertaker's legacy. I don't think that the criticisms are about the legacy of The Undertaker and Goldberg. I think they're about the immediacy of The Undertaker and Goldberg, you know? I think that if The Undertaker and or Goldberg announced, you know, we're done, we're hanging up the boots, especially if The Undertaker said today, I'm retiring from wrestling, nobody's going to sit there and say, good, that last match sucked. They're going to have a celebration, the likes of which even Ric Flair would go, wow. When The Undertaker announces that he's done, his legacy is going to be celebrated maybe more than any WWE superstar in history. Nobody has a legacy like The Undertaker. And I don't think anybody is taking that legacy away. If they are, they shouldn't. But I don't think anybody's sitting here and saying The Undertaker is not one of, if not, you could make an argument at this point that The Undertaker is the greatest wrestler of all time. And I don't think anybody's taking him out of that conversation. I don't think anybody's sitting here and saying The Undertaker is not one of, if not the greatest wrestlers of all time. But what people are saying is he's got to be careful about who his opponents are. I think if The Undertaker's opponent were somebody young who he could count on in there, somebody who does this day in, day out, who's ready for any situation to happen in the ring, Elias, for example, that was what I advocated for, have an Undertaker-Elias match, I think an Undertaker-Elias match would go a lot differently. I think a Goldberg-Elias match would go a lot differently, but Goldberg's got to relax. Goldberg's got to calm down. You don't need to be getting this intense, G-Man. I mean, come on. Chill out when you're in there. You keep knocking yourself unconscious, and it's making the product worse. Stop knocking yourself unconscious. It's bad for you. You can't do that. You got a family at home. They don't want to see you get knocked out. Relax. Bring the intensity down a couple notches. You're making people lose faith in The Undertaker. Losing faith in The Undertaker or losing faith in Goldberg is different from taking their legacy away. I don't think having faith in either of those two is the same as acknowledging their legacy, you know? And I honestly don't think that the match at Super Showdown changes their legacy whatsoever. I think at the end of the day, those two are both still legends. Goldberg fans are going to remain Goldberg fans. Undertaker fans are going to remain Undertaker fans. But that pissed off look on The Undertaker's face at the end of that match said it all. Said it all. Let's end with story number one. John Cena one time got a boner when he was wrestling. I'm just kidding. It is a John Cena story. But he said a couple of things this week. He did say that one time he got an accidental boner while he was wrestling. But he also, the conversation about John Cena retiring came up. Now, I got to tell you something, man. As I was watching John Cena this week, something really occurred to me. I miss John Cena. The real John Cena. You know, we got a nice moment from John Cena at WrestleMania with the Doctor of Thugonomics and the doing the thing, and that's cool. But I miss John Cena coming out and doing a program. I miss the John Cena that lost to Roman Reigns. I can't believe it. You know, you'd sit there. We complained about John Cena for so long. Everybody complained about John Cena. Everybody. It's like SNL. On SNL, you always complain about the cast and you talk about how much better the cast before them was. And you don't give credit to the current cast until another cast comes and takes their place. Man, how refreshing, how amazing would it be if John Cena came out and cut a promo on Raw? A real John Cena promo. How good would it feel? Do, 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 do. Well, sounds like we're having a good time tonight. And John Cena comes out and does his John Cena thing. And spends like 15 minutes just in the ring hyping up a story. Let's get through Stomping Ground. Let's bring back John Cena to have a match at Extreme Rules. I miss John Cena, man. But John Cena, he was running around doing press this week because he's going to be the host of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader on Nickelodeon. And of course, wrestling follows him wherever he goes. And he was talking to TMZ about retirement. I think TMZ asked him about the Undertaker-Goldberg match and whether they should retire. And he said that, you know, he doesn't believe that somebody else should tell a performer to retire. He believes that that's one of those things that they're going to have to answer. That each and every performer decides when they should retire. And I agree with that. You know, if you're still drawing an audience, if there's still a value, if you're still going to sell stuff, keep performing if you want to keep performing. You know, if you're really that bad, people won't buy tickets, right? So I'm agreeing with him on that, but then they asked him, what about you? And he said that that's something he's been thinking about. That he's been thinking about, you know, he's 42, and he's been thinking about what his retirement looks like. And then he went on Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live, and he clarified, one of the callers called in and asked him about retiring, and he clarified that he'll never be retired from the WWE. He's going to do Fast and the Furious. He's going to do Smarter Than a Fifth Grader. He's going to do everything that he can to be mainstream movie star John Cena, and good on him, you know? He makes me want to buy pistachios, but he said he'll always be involved somehow. He said, again, he doesn't know what his in-ring career looks like. I mean, I'll bet John Cena could still go. You kidding me? But he doesn't know what his in-ring career looks like, but what he does know is that whether it's in front of the camera or behind the camera, he will always be a part of the WWE in some way, shape, or form. And I believe that. But when you really think about it, it has been super weird not having John Cena around. It's odd. It's odd. There's been a real gap from the WWE since John Cena left, and it hasn't been felt. And it hasn't come close to being filled, you know? And I think there are guys that could fill it. I think theoretically Seth Rollins could be that caliber of a guy. Roman Reigns could be that caliber of a guy. But, you know, I think that people don't have the patience to go through another rise of John Cena. You know, John Cena, it took years to actually get respect for many, many, many years. It was, we don't want to see John Cena. And excuse me, I don't think that the WWE wants that again. I don't think that the WWE wants another, our main good guy gets booed at every building and we have to explain why. You know, I don't think that that's the vibe WWE wants. But people I think people are ready for a new star. People are ready to see a star come out of the rubble that's been left from John Cena. There's a lot of guys out there that are on the cusp. There's a lot of guys that potentially could be stars. But there isn't a guy right now who's the next clear face. WWE needs a face. They need a face of the company. They need, this is our guy. And I know that they were building Roman Reigns, but either make Roman Reigns that guy or make him, you know, second in command. If you could make a face of the company that's even bigger than Roman Reigns and allow Roman Reigns to stay in the position that he's in, you've got two mega stars there. But you got to do it, man. You got to do it. And it means making somebody look like $1 million. And maybe that's the plan with Roman, man. You know, maybe the plan over the course of this year is to build Roman back up to the point where next year he'll have another crowning moment at WrestleMania or something like that. And maybe people will buy it because they're so eager for a star. I'm not sure that they will, just because Roman has had so many opportunities. But who knows? Who knows? They got to have somebody like John Cena, you know? But look, you know, you also need somebody that can stand toe-to-toe with The Rock. John Cena stood toe-to-toe with The Rock. John Cena embarrassed The Rock. Remember that promo where John Cena pointed out that his promo was written on his arm? John Cena actually went on television and embarrassed The Rock. Who can do that? Who do you think can really do that in WWE right now? Is that Roman Reigns? Is that Seth Rollins? I don't know. Is it Kofi Kingston? I don't know. I don't know. But I think that might be our homework for this week. Let's watch the show and let's watch it hard. Maybe it's Jack Gallagher. Is it Jack Gallagher from 205 Live? Is he the next face of the company? I don't know. But maybe it's time to keep a close eye on the shows. And let's figure out who we're going to strap that rocket to. Who's our guy? You help me figure it out. We'll be right back here next week on Not Sam Wrestling. I can't wait for you to join me. We'll see you then. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Rate, review, and subscribe. This has been Not Sam Wrestling. Not Sam.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.